Concerns about coronavirus and influenza rise. A highly infectious virus known as coronavirus is dominating headlines this week as the number of new cases grows. More than 40,000 cases have been reported so far, most in China. About 1,000 people are confirmed dead. Airlines have canceled flights in and out of China. Japan quarantined passengers on a cruise ship. And even some Colby College students have quarantined themselves after a trip to China. Here in Maine, however, public health officials are more concerned about a surge in influenza cases. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will talk with the head of the Maine CDC, Dr. Nirav Shah, and the Health Improvement Officer for Maine Health, Dr. Dora Mills, about coronavirus and flu. What's the very latest information? How can we keep ourselves and our families healthy? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. The daily news about the spread of coronavirus is alarming, but the flu currently presents a greater threat to the people of Maine, the influenza. Today, we will discuss both and how to protect yourself. Joining me in our studio, Dr. Dora Mills, who is Chief Health Improvement Officer for Maine Health, and Dr. Nirav Shah, who is Director of Maine's Center for Disease Control. As always, we want to hear from you. Do you have questions about the spread of coronavirus? Are you concerned about how prevalent the flu is this year? You can send an email, a brief email, please, to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment on today's Facebook post, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. I want to start with coronavirus just because that's so very much in the news. And Dr. Mills, I'll start with you. What makes this virus different than other viruses that are always circulating around the world? Why the alarm about coronavirus right now?
Well, I should just start by saying that coronaviruses are a whole family of viruses that commonly circulate as cold viruses, about a third to about 40% of colds that we get are actually from different forms of coronaviruses. But what we learned about 17 years ago in 2003, we had this strain called SARS, a specific type of coronavirus that emerged out of China and seemed to have come from a type of coronavirus that circulates a lot around in bats and other wild animals. And it hopped over to humans and it became more contagious, human to human. It was transmitted from human to human, and it was also more virulent. It caused more severe disease than the types of coronaviruses that normally cause colds. Back in 2003, we had a number of SARS cases across this country that came here from a province in China. We had about 12 people whom we suspected might have SARS here in Maine because they had traveled to that part of China, come home and had symptoms, but it turned out none of them had it. We had to keep them at home and keep them isolated and had them tested, and then they tested negative. They had some other kind of respiratory infection. So then MERS was another type of coronavirus that emerged a few years ago out of the Middle East that also causes a more severe infection. We didn't see any MERS here, at least in New England, or in Maine at least. And then this one has emerged, this novel, 2019 novel coronavirus, that again is more acting like SARS than it did than the other coronaviruses that normally cause colds.
So the concern is really that it seems to be spreading very quickly.
Well, it seems to be spreading through the usual ways that coronaviruses spread, like through respiratory droplets, as we call. So heavy sneezing and coughing, droplets that come out of sneezing and coughing, people having it on their hands from either shaking hands with somebody who sneezed or coughed in their hands and then touching their face. Because often these viruses, the droplets get in into your body through your eyes, nose, and mouth when you touch your face, which is why it's important to not touch your face with unwashed hands. So it seems so far to be spreading the usual ways that coronaviruses spread. It does seem to be spreading faster than SARS did, but it's a lot left to be determined. And we also, although it appears that the case fatality rate, that is how severe it is, might be less than SARS. But again, we don't know, although Dr. Shaw is in much closer contact, is in close contact with USAC.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you. What do you know right now? Do we know for certain, for absolute certain, that there are no cases of this coronavirus in Maine?
As of right now, according to the U.S. CDC as well as the Maine CDC, the overall risk of coronavirus to anybody in Maine, anybody in the country, is very low. Based on, as of right now, there are no confirmed cases of coronavirus in Maine. We are, however, at the Maine CDC, actively engaged and prepared in the nationwide and worldwide efforts to make sure that if a case were to occur in Maine, we're ready. We're focused on three things, what I call the three I's. The first is to identify potential cases. The second is to make sure that anyone with the signs and symptoms are rapidly isolated. And the third is to make sure our gumshoe epidemiologists are ready to investigate any cases we have. So our focus right now is on identifying cases, isolating them, and investigating anyone who may have come in contact with those.
Is one of the concerns that we're not confident that all of the information that needs to be out about this is coming out? Is that, you know, I noticed that public health officials at the very beginning of this were very cautious how they talked about the information coming out of China. They would say this is much better than the SARS epidemic, but they were very careful not to say we have everything we need. And is that one of the big concerns here, is that we're not really sure if we're getting all the information from China?
I think where my colleagues and I are, my counterparts in the other 49 states, we are very much in trust but verify mode. We believe that information is coming out of China. We believe that it is as verifiable as it can be. But we're also double-checking and looking at our models to see whether the information that's reported accords with what's in our models. It is impressive and important to note that with respect to this coronavirus, we went from, in mid-December, not quite sure what was going on, to 3.5 weeks later, a fully synthesized and sequenced genome of this brand-new virus. In a matter of 3.5 weeks, much of that initial work was done by Chinese officials. So there are good signs on the horizon, but our mantra continues to be trust but verify.
And I would just add to that that compared to 2003, I was in Dr. Shaw's position at that time, and we knew very little compared to what we know now. So it does seem like things have improved a great deal. With that said, there's increasingly knowledge of what we do know about this novel coronavirus. There's also a lot that we don't know yet, that knowledge is emerging. And I would say that one of the adages about epidemics is that the most predictable thing about an epidemic is its unpredictability. So there's a lot that we don't know, and yet so far the knowledge that we have is also it's a little bit reassuring in some ways. So, you know, in terms of the information we're getting out of China, for instance.
I know, Dr. Shaw, you don't really want to talk about coronavirus. You want to talk about influenza. And so we will talk about both, and I appreciate you addressing both today. What is the latest in Maine as far as influenza cases? How bad is this season compared to others? What do we know?
Right now in Maine, there are the numbers of influenza cases that are reported to the Maine CDC, and we only know what's been reported to us. The number of cases is in line with what we've seen in previous years, but we're not at the peak of the season yet. To put the numbers in perspective, there have been 13 deaths, sadly, in Maine associated with seasonal influenza. 13 deaths. That's more deaths in Maine than there have been in the entire country of cases of coronavirus. There's only 12 cases of coronavirus in the country. The flu is, when you talk to folks about the flu, it's interesting because we're used to the flu, whereas the coronavirus is new. And so human psychology is such that we're always afraid of the thing that's new. And that's understandable. And that's why we're taking this seriously, the coronavirus threat. But it's also important to remember that the context here matters. Influenza remains a much bigger risk for anybody in Maine, anybody in the country right now where we are. I think what's going on with the flu, among many things, is that it suffers from a bit of an image problem, insofar as that the image of the flu is that it's benign, almost innocuous. Maybe what we need to do as a public health community is to rename the flu infectious virus XK2 alpha, which would get people concerned about it, because the fact is the flu is very, very serious.
What do we know about how effective the flu shot is this year?
It's too early to tell. We don't really know what the overall effectiveness of any vaccine will be until enough doses and until we're far enough into the season. It can vary year by year. The flu vaccine can vary from anywhere from being 20 to 30% effective all the way upwards of 60%. But even in a year when it's at the lowest peak of effectiveness, that's still a really good amount of protection for something that only takes a few minutes to do.
All right. Go ahead.
I was going to say, too, it's also difficult this year because there's a lot of B strain, type B. You know, there are a couple of major types of flu, influenza A and influenza B. And the B strain that is circulating, am I not right, Dr. Shah, that it's really hitting a lot of young people hard. And I know I've heard of some young people who have been hit very hard and been hospitalized with it. So I think that's particularly striking in this year's flu season. And it's never too late to get a flu shot. And as Dr. Shah said, you know, it's even when the flu shot may not be the best match, you still are more likely to get less severe of a case of influenza if you're vaccinated.
Dr. Mills, I want to just underscore what Dr. Mills just mentioned. It is not too late to get the flu shot. For every single person listening, please take a minute to get the flu shot. If you're not only protecting you, you're protecting other people in your family and your community who might not be able to get it. It is not too late.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned 13 deaths so far. What is the profile of those? Are these people who are older, who are immunocompromised, if I'm saying that correctly, already, or is it a variety of types of people?
You know, one of the things that concerns me about the flu is that although quite a few of the individuals in any given year who pass away from the flu have been older or have pre-existing health conditions, the flu can also strike people who are in the prime of their lives and completely healthy. It is a very, very serious illness. Just to put the numbers in perspective again, just this year so far, this flu season from October to the present, across the country, more than 10,000 estimated people have passed away from the flu. 10,000 estimated deaths. Over 120,000 hospitalizations just this flu season alone. It's very serious. It's something we urge everyone to take really, really seriously.
So, you know, let's get back to how to protect ourselves. Dr. Mills recommended washing your hands, not touching your face. And, you know, it's always a good reminder. But what if one has to travel? I mean, I have to confess, my kids make fun of me because I take wipes and I, you know, put them on, take them on the airplane with me and wipe myself down. But I don't wear a mask. Do you believe people, if they're getting on an airplane, especially for an international flight or getting on a train, it might be a good idea to wear a mask?
Well, I think what I've heard some experts say, which I think is a good thought, is that the best thing a mask does, especially the regular surgical mask with the wide openings, is that they help remind you not to touch your face with unwashed hands. So they may not necessarily prevent you from getting influenza or coronavirus the way you think that they would, because the ones that you tend to get in the drugstore, for instance, they're not closely fitting at all. And so viruses can go through the mask, but they also can come in and out around the sides of the mask. So but a number of people I've heard say, you know, but they do remind you not to touch your face with an unwashed hand.
As it relates to regular seasonal influenza, we don't recommend routinely wearing masks. If you happen to have the signs and symptoms of the flu and you are actively coughing and you go to a healthcare institution, a clinic, your doctor's office, they might put a mask on you. The function of that is to protect you from spreading it to others. But for someone who is traveling through an airport or on a bus, wearing a mask isn't the best thing. What I would recommend everybody do, as Dr. Mills said, is wash your hands really thoroughly, avoid touching your face, and do the other things that you should be doing anyways to stay healthy. Try to exercise, get a lot of sleep at night, eat a good diet. Those are the best ways to stay healthy generally and also to protect against the flu.
How long will a flu virus germ be active on a door handle in a public place? Like how long, you know, what do we need to know about the surfaces we share in public?
Well, my understanding from both coronaviruses and influenza viruses that they can live on surfaces for several hours, but it really depends on the specific type of coronavirus or influenza viruses. So if you are in a place like an elevator, you know, the buttons on an elevator probably have a lot of people's hands, you know, fingers on them, right? So you know that that's a place where, you know, you could have viruses there. A railing on a staircase that's used quite a bit. So that's one of the reasons why you want to make sure that if you have been touching things, washing shaking hands with people or touching railings on a staircase or elevator buttons, that you just get in the habit of thinking of your hands of being dirty and not touching your face. Because that's, you could have viruses on your hands at any time, but the way you're going to contract those viruses, get infected with them, is if you have your hands touch your eyes, nose, or mouth. Your hands don't normally just transmit a virus by itself. They have to actually get to your mucous membranes in your eyes and your nose and your mouth.
It's hard not to, though. As you're saying that right now, my eye is like, I want to rub my eyes because it's sort of power of suggestion, isn't it?
Yes.
Dr. Shaw.
Well, what we know is that risk depends on exposure. Some viruses are able to live on surfaces for a long time and can be passed by touching them on a surface, like the measles virus. But with viruses like some of the ones we're talking about today, influenza, coronavirus, the main means of exposure is through being exposed to respiratory droplets, someone sneezing in your vicinity, coughing on you. That's the area that we know is the main means for transmission of some of these viruses. Although it's possible theoretically for them to live on surfaces, the main way that you're going to get them would be through being in close proximity to someone who sneezed, for example.
All right. We're going to go to Bethany, who's calling from Cumberland. Hi, Bethany. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi there. I'm a physician here in Maine, and I'm following the coronavirus very carefully because I have a son in Singapore where they have three times as many reported cases and are doing an amazing job of epidemiology. And my question is, do any of your experts know why the CDC has not reported any new cases for the last 4 days?
It's a good question. It's something that we have calls to discuss and multiple times per day what the status is. One of the reasons that there haven't been any new cases in the United States is possible that there hasn't been any new transmission. What I mean by that is that in the aftermath of a lot of the travel being restricted coming from China to the United States, the number of folks who could have been carrying the virus, traveling with it to the U.S. fell quite a bit. Of the 12 cases in the United States, 10 of them were in individuals who had just been in China. Only two of those had been from close partners, spouses in this case, of those initial cases. Because there were rapid measures put into place to restrict the number of folks coming into the United States, our hope is that there isn't a lot of what's called secondary transmission in the U.S. So it's possible that because of those rapid measures, there hasn't been more people traveling to the United States that would have new cases popping up.
All right. Thank you, Bethany, for your question. A Facebook comment from Stephen. What do your guests think of Trump's remarks today? And our producer notes they were actually last Friday. Referring to the coronavirus, Trump says he was told by China's President Xi by April, during the month of April, the heat generally kills this kind of virus, so that would be a good thing. Does heat kill a virus? Does the changing weather change a virus?
Well, he may have been referring, I don't know, I didn't hear the full comment, but he might have been referring to the fact that influenza and a lot of coronaviruses do tend to circulate in the winter and not during the summer. Now, when we've had pandemics with influenza, like with H1N1, what makes it a pandemic strain is that it does tend to circulate year-round. With this particular coronavirus, I don't know if anybody fully knows because there's so much that we're just learning about it, but many other coronaviruses, including ones that are very similar to it, like SARS, tend to circulate during the winter months for lots of reasons and some reasons we don't even fully understand. With SARS in 2003, it emerged also in the winter and really kind of blew up in about March, April or so. And as I recall it, it did fizzle pretty quickly. So who knows? Maybe this will do the same.
Okay. We are going to go to a quick break. If you'd like to join the conversation about coronavirus and influenza, our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post a comment on our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Patriot Subaru, with a mission to serve customers, families, community, and each other. Learn more at patriotsubaru.com. And the Maine Seacoast Mission, asking Mainers what they need to thrive and working to meet those needs every day. Learn more at seacoastmission.org/ourstory.
I'm Greg Dalton. On the next Climate One, who's moving ahead and who's lagging behind in the transition to carbon-free energy?
In Europe, if you look at Spain and Ireland, there's a lot of progress there.
We talk about Sweden quite a bit, France, Ontario, South Korea.
In Sweden, for instance, half of the power comes from hydroelectric and half from nuclear.
Drawing down carbon pollution on the next Climate One.
That's coming up at 2 o'clock this afternoon right here on Maine Public Radio. Maine Public Classical and Minnesota Public Radio are teaming up this October for an exclusive European classical music river cruise down the Blue Danube. The trip includes visits to world-class museums, grand opera houses, and the celebrated symphony halls of Budapest, Salzburg, Vienna, and Prague. In this 250th anniversary year of Beethoven's birth, numerous classical concerts are scheduled, as are visits to the homes of Liszt, Mozart, and Beethoven. Please note, space is limited. For information, please visit mainepublic.org and click on the events dropdown for Maine Public Travel.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we are getting an update on what's happening with coronavirus as well as the flu here in Maine. My guest, Nirav Shah, director of the Maine CDC, and Dora Mills, chief health improvement officer with Maine Health. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. On the line with us is Na Liu. She's a physician based in Maine and is originally from Wuhan, China. Dr. Liu, thanks so much for calling in.
Oh, thank you, Jennifer, invite me.
What have you heard from your family members in Wuhan about the situation there?
Current situation in Wuhan is still very critical. The spread of the virus continues, and my family, I and the other many families, I experienced a lot of anxiety, fear, depression. This is probably first ever, you know, in generations, we didn't celebrate Chinese New Year, which normally lasts about month time. But we are hopeful that things will get better with, you know, weather get warmer and things like that. The virus, supposedly, most recent report says that this virus can be deactivated in like 50 Celsius temperature. So hopefully with the time getting warmer, things can turn around pretty quickly.
As a doctor, what do you think led to such a rapid spread of the virus?
I think there is multiple reasons. I mean, first of all, this epidemic happened the unknown, and that there's a learning curve to figure out how to handle it and how to learn everything about it. And especially this virus has been shown from most recent update that has a long incubation time. And the shortest time, like 5 days, but longer sometimes up to 25 days. Patients can remain asymptomatic. And that compares SARS in the past about 5 to 7 days is significantly longer, so make the diagnosis very difficult. There's also a lot of limitation on rapid early detection. I believe the most up-to-date, the PCR testing sensitivity about 30%. So as a medical professional, this is not very sensitive for screening for this disease at all. And the CT scan show bilateral ground glass opacity is about like 70% of sensitivity. And there's a lot of patients, like 50% of them, do not even have symptom of fever. So that make overall the early detection or identify like a symptomatic carrier become very challenging. And we also have to know that, you know, 11 million people in Wuhan, so it's a huge, dense population. And then when there are thousand patients went to the clinic, it easily overwhelmed the whole healthcare system. So I think that overall make this epidemic become very rapidly spread.
Let me ask you a related question. Do you worry about, do you fear a spread of xenophobia because of the origination of coronavirus or this coronavirus being in China?
Say that again?
Do you fear that there will be prejudice, xenophobia against people who are Chinese and people traveling to and from China?
I think I have some impression, like, you know, people probably talk a little more when I'm around than about incidents like that. And they also worry that whether they should ask the question, you know, have you been recently, you know, contact with people that have the infection before? So this is definitely, you know, things like that is going on. But I think this is, you know, it's understandable. You know, people even within the Chinese community, we have the concern as well, you know, because we don't know much about this condition. And it's very, very normal to have the reaction. But, you know, it's just that sometimes people can take it into an extreme, might make things unnecessarily harder, which is not very fair. But
thank you. Thank you so much for giving us a call. I want to ask you before we let you go, Dr. Liu,
sure.
Is your family okay?
Yeah, they are.
Oh, wonderful.
Pretty okay. Yeah. So my mom had a fever for about a day, and that's at the very beginning. So I told them to stay out of hospital because, you know, I don't even know whether when they go to hospital, they can really get the care at all. After that, she subsided, and then most of my family are okay. And I have to say, you know, there's a lot of encouragement for all the people. They actually remain in Wuhan and volunteer and being involved in trying to help and control this epidemic. It's very amazing courage for them, you know, to decide to stay and listen to the government arrangement, have trust in the government, and that, you know, hopefully things can get better pretty soon.
Well, thank you so much for calling in. That's Na Liu. She's a physician here in Maine, and she has family in Wuhan, China. I want to talk about something that Dr. Liu was talking about, and that is the detection and how difficult it is to detect. And how do we detect it? How do we determine that coronavirus is this as opposed to a regular cold or something like this? Is this a swab in a nostril? Is it a blood test? How do we know?
Right now in the United States, the testing for the coronavirus is being done at the CDC in Atlanta. However, just a couple of days ago, the CDC released that test to state public health laboratories across the country. And this morning here in Maine, our Maine CDC laboratory in Augusta just this morning received all of the materials that we will need to be able to do the test for coronavirus here in Maine. We're going to be starting to set all that those materials up, and hopefully in the coming days, we'll be conducting the test here in Maine. Individuals are tested in the same way that they might be for a lot of other viruses, through a swab in the nose or in the back of the throat, and those are sent over to the laboratory where those experts run it through their machines to see if the DNA sequence matches up to anything that's in our library. Maybe it's coronavirus, maybe it's regular influenza.
And is it indeed sort of like latent for a while in some patients?
Yeah, like all viruses, usually is a few hours to several days before you have symptoms. And then at the first sign of symptoms, you know, you can usually test for it. I should just mention at Maine Health, we started screening people about 3 weeks ago, I think it was, around Martin Luther King Day, as I recall. We asked providers in our emergency rooms and outpatient clinics and the like to start screening people for the travel history that CDC was recommending at the time. It was, I think, the Hubei province at the time, I think it's expanded now to all of China, as well as for symptoms of cough and or fever. So we had a rapid response team that works on our electronic medical record system, and they within several hours, about a couple of days, had implemented full screening across our health system. So we have about 12 hospitals and anybody in clinics, and many clinics, and so anybody encountering our health system is going to be asked about travel specifically to China and coughing and fever. We also have refreshed our masks and posters outside of our entrances asking people if they have a cough to please put a mask on for the reasons that Dr. Shaw mentioned. If you're having a cough, we want you to put a mask on so you're not spreading it to others.
So Maine Health has been doing screenings for 3 weeks and you've had no positive results for coronavirus.
There's no confirmed cases right now in the state that I know of. And Dr. Shaw is nodding his head. Nobody who's had the symptoms and the travel history or exposure to somebody else with it and has had a test that has been confirmed positive. We also, like Dr. Shaw mentioned, it's, you know, identify people, the three I's. We have two parts of that we work in conjunction with Maine CDC with. One is identify, so we screen people, as I mentioned. And then the second I being isolation. So if somebody does come in who who fits the criteria, then we immediately put them in a private room so that they're not, we put a mask on them, we put them in a private room, and so that they're not able to spread it to other people.
All right, we're going to go to Ned, who's calling from Northport. Hi, Ned, go ahead.
Hi, yes, thank you. You know, hearing about the rush to develop a vaccine for the virus makes me think about the fact that on March 3rd, I'm going to be asked to vote on whether to overturn the law about mandatory immunization for children based on personal, religious, or personal preference, I guess. And I'm trying to make an informed decision here. I certainly respect people wanting to have personal freedoms. On the other hand, sometimes I fear that, you know, if you live in a society, you need to do things for the common good. It's been difficult for me to get a expert opinion on whether I should, where I should be voting on this. And I thought, in light of your expertise of your guests, maybe you could give me a little bit of insight into this.
So, Ned, thank you so much for that question. I will say that Maine Calling will be devoting an entire program to this topic as we get closer to the referendum. But I sort of happen to know how both of you feel about this referendum, so I'm going to give you a one of you a chance to respond. Dora?
Well, I think I can speak for both of us, Dr. Shaw and myself, that we are very much on a vote. A no on one, in that we do believe that the law that passed last year that the administration supported that requires in about a year and a half or so all school children to have the legally required vaccines. This isn't all vaccines, but the legally required vaccines is sort of a social contract. If you go to school, you send your children to school, then they need to be vaccinated against some basic diseases so they're not spreading them to others, and particularly our immunocompromised children and others who can't, for medical reasons, be vaccinated.
Ned, thank you so much for the question. We have a Facebook question from Janet. Do we know how many people in Maine got a flu shot? Did fewer people get it, so that's why more people have the flu?
The data on how many folks in Maine get the flu shot come in as the season is going, and we don't have those data at this point in the season quite yet. What we know is that not everyone who is eligible or should get the flu shot has done so. There are a lot of categories of folks that we are particularly concerned about, namely pregnant women. One of the areas that we've been trying to focus on in our messaging is to encourage every single person to get the flu shot, but especially, particularly, women who are pregnant, making sure that doctors' offices have it on hand and ask.
All right. We'll go to Carol, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Carol. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I am really good about washing my hands the minute I get home and hand sanitizer in the car. But sometimes on just like a little short trip, I'll just leave my gloves on and I think, oh, I'm fine. But do I need to worry that the germs are on my gloves and then if I touch my face?
Sure. I mean, yes, the germs would be on your gloves. But, you know, if you're not touching your face with your gloves, and that's good, and you can also take them off, obviously, when you get home. But some viruses can penetrate the material of gloves as well. So, you know, it does provide you some protection, but I wouldn't say it's not as good as washing hands frequently. And I usually have some of the alcohol-based hand sanitizer in the little cubby there between the two front seats. And so that's what I usually rely on when I'm out and about.
All right. Thanks, Carol, for your question. We have a Facebook question from Colleen. What is Colby College's responsibility to the public when they did their own quarantine of at-risk students in the local hotel? They, at that point, exposed hotel workers, other guests, etc. Is that how a quarantine is normally done? What steps are being taken in Maine to protect people? And that's Colleen's question, and I think she's responding to news articles that students who had traveled to China, who had no symptoms of illness, have on their own at Colby's request, quarantine themselves in a hotel. But sounds like Colleen's pretty concerned about that protocol. What do you say, Dr. Shaw?
Well, as Colleen noted, and as you mentioned, Jennifer, Colby College decided to go above and beyond and take the step of asking students and providing them with alternative housing, students who had just returned from China. This was done out of an abundance of caution. And we at the Maine CDC have been working with Colby College to make sure that having taken that step, we're involved with monitoring the students, making sure that the workers other hotel staff, other hotel guests are kept safe. And we've been providing Colby College officials with guidance, not just from Maine CDC, but from the U.S. CDC, to make sure that everyone stays safe.
Are there any other situations like that unfolding in Maine, or is that the only one?
At present, that's the only similar situation.
All right. Well, we are talking about coronavirus and influenza on Maine Calling. If you have any questions, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Maine Masonic Charitable Foundation, supporting Maine Public Radio's efforts to provide knowledge, wisdom, and entertainment to the people of Maine. Ford Murray, immigration lawyers for universities, hospitals, and businesses in Maine and across the nation. FordMurrayLaw.com. And St. Mary's Health System Orthopedics, helping patients live their best lives in motion. Online at findabonedoctorme.org.
On This Day in Maine's History is brought to you in partnership with the Maine Historical Society.
On February 10, 1998, voters in Maine rejected a law enacted in 1997 banning sexual orientation discrimination in the private sector. In doing so, Maine became the first state in the nation to repeal a law preventing discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation. Later in 2012, Maine became one of the first U.S. states to approve same-sex marriage through a ballot initiative and the fifth New England state to legalize same-sex marriage.
On This Day in Maine's History is made possible through the generous support of Thomaston Place Auction Galleries. Happy birthday, Maine!
A big thank you to all of you who took part in Let's Grow Together Winter Membership Drive. Over $260,000 was raised, and we welcomed in over 340 new members in support of Maine Public Radio and Maine Public Classical. Thanks for doing your part to make public radio possible. Together, we keep this option alive for our communities. Now, if you missed the drive, it's never too late. You can pledge your support anytime, including right now, at mainepublic.org. Again, together, we got the job done. Thanks.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, the spread of infectious diseases, coronavirus, and the flu. My guests are Dora Mills with Maine Health and Nirav Shah with the Maine CDC, both doctors. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. So many calls in the rest of the hour. I'll go as quickly as I can. But I wanted to ask you first, Dr. Shah, so much of what we use in today's world was made in China. Do any products contain a risk? If I'm buying something at the store, could that packaging have virus on it?
I'm glad you asked that question. It's one that we've received quite a bit. And so the answer there is that for any product that you might receive that is shipped over from China, as best as we can tell, the risk from getting coronavirus from that product is extremely, extremely low. Even if the virus did live on the surface of the product and we don't have any evidence to say it does, the possibility that there would be sufficient amounts of it to cause any kind of infection are vanishingly small. There's a related question about the extent to which individuals on cruise ships, transport ships, merchant marine folks maybe themselves have a risk. And what we know is that the time it takes for passage from China for any ship to arrive in the U.S. is long enough that we would know whether that individual had any symptoms before they were allowed into the country.
All right. We have an email question from Melody. If a person received a flu shot in Maine for the current flu season, would they be protected, if at all, if they were exposed to the coronavirus?
No, but with that said, influenza virus protects against influenza, which is a totally separate virus than coronavirus. However, if coronavirus were to this novel coronavirus were to spread here, it is very helpful for you to be vaccinated against influenza because you don't want to be exposed to both viruses at the same time. Now, that said, we don't know the chances are very low that this novel coronavirus will come here, but we just don't know. There's a lot we don't know. One thing I should just mention along those lines is that Dr. Shah and I were just talking during the break is that we don't know how effective these travel restrictions will be. We haven't implemented such travel restrictions in decades. The traditional thought behind travel restrictions is that it slows down the spread of an epidemic into an area, but it doesn't prevent it from coming in fully. So it's going to be very interesting as the time unfolds to find out, you know, learn how this happens, but how this unfolds. But yes, it's always a good idea to get the flu shot, but it won't specifically protect you against coronavirus.
An email from Edie. With the topic about coronavirus, there's not been mention of using classical homeopathy to treat this, which is capable of doing it. There are also excellent, safe, effective homeopathic remedies for treating the flu. There hasn't been much mention of people doing what they can to have their immune systems function optimally. Healthy food, adequate sleep, drinking enough water, simple steps. I devote a lot of my practice encouraging people to make improvements in what they eat, to be optimally nourished, and to put to use in their behalf lifestyle medicine. And with the Health Freedom Act having passed last summer, holistic health care in Maine is now altogether legal. So, Dr. Dora, I see you nodding your head. You tell people, get enough sleep, drink enough water, be healthy.
Absolutely. What I can say that I agree with the questioner is that, yes, having a holistic, healthy lifestyle is important. Keeping up your nutritional status, not smoking. I think probably besides getting a flu shot and having good respiratory hygiene, the most important other step is to not smoke, because we know smokers have people who are tobacco addicted have much worse influenza than others. And yes, and generally taking care of yourself. But if you are sick, there are medications, particularly if you're at high risk for severe influenza, such as Tamiflu. So it is important to make sure to call your doctor.
All right. A Facebook question from Louise. Please help us understand the mixed information regarding hand sanitizer and antibacterial cleaners in general. If you kill off, say, 90% of the pathogens, will the ones that survive be the strongest and therefore contribute to a stronger mutation of the virus? I have a feeling this could be an entire Maine Calling program. But Dr. Shaw, let's make it brief. Do you advocate use of hand sanitizers despite the risk of it creating potentially mutant stronger viruses?
Hand sanitizers have a role. But if you put in front of me a sink with a traditional bar of soap or a bottle of hand sanitizer, I would use the sink and the traditional bar of soap. The physical action of washing your hands and letting the water drain the virus away, to me, is a better proposition than using hand sanitizer.
But she does have an legitimate concern, correct?
There are folks that are increasingly growing concerned about the extent to which hand sanitizer could be contributing to the development of resistance. So for me, I would choose the physical friction of the sink and a bar of soap over the hand sanitizer.
All right, we'll go to Eric calling from Gorham. Hi, Eric, go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call, guys. Quick question about sort of the origin of these new viruses or mutations of viruses or whatnot. So, for all intents and purposes, we're saying that this coronavirus may have came from market in Wuhan. You know, what can people do? What can the global health community do? What can anybody do to sort of prevent these things from happening in the first place? Is there anything? Is it possible even?
That's a great question. I'm so glad you raised that. As you note, that right now, based on what we know in the scientific literature, this virus likely originated from a market in the central Chinese city of Wuhan. Many of these viruses have their natural habitat in animals that humans don't typically come into contact with: bats, civets, other types of creatures. But when we put humans and animals in very close proximity to one another, there's the possibility that the viruses can jump from the animals to the humans in a way that might not have occurred in the wild. We're seeing that with increasing frequency, and candidly, it's an increasing risk. What we can do about it are two things. The first is to make sure that our disease surveillance infrastructure is as up-to-date as it can be. Here in the United States, we've been talking about what Maine CDC and Maine Health are doing, which is top of the line. But we need to make sure that same surveillance capacity exists in other countries. The other thing we can do is to start looking for these areas of close human-animal interaction and try to introduce separation, for example, by closing down some of these markets.
All right, Eric, go ahead.
And I would just add, in Maine, I totally agree with what you said, Dr. Shaw. And also, we're not talking about cats and dogs so much, but pets. I know people who have asked me about, is it okay to have chickens in the house and have them as pets? And I've said, no, they're not really. Chickens are not meant to be in close proximity, excuse me, to humans. And so it's those kind of wild animals that we are not meant to be in close proximity.
What about pot-bellied pigs?
Pigs, I would say the same category. I mean, we're not meant to live right next to, you know, sleep in the same bed with chickens and pigs.
So dogs and cats, okay, but kind of outside of that, you wouldn't.
Yeah. No, I mean, we're not meant to. And that's, if you, there are a number of diseases, infections that Dr. Shah and I could go list that have jumped from these kinds of animals to humans, including different strains of influenza viruses that have come from migratory birds, landed on backyard hens, and then can be transmitted to us. Also with the swine flu. I mean, it originated from some swine. So we're not meant to have very close, intimate contact with wild animals.
All right. Eric, thank you for your question. I'm going to go to Chris, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Chris. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I was just looking to find out how long somebody is contagious once they have gotten a cold or a flu or a virus of this sort. I've always heard over the years that, after 2, 3, 4 days, you're no longer contagious, even though we cough for a week or two. What is the general rule with that, or is there a general rule with that?
The rule of thumb that I urge folks is that if you're still having symptoms, it's likely you're still contagious. It varies by virus. It can even vary by person. But as a general rule, if you're not feeling well, and especially if you're coughing or sneezing, you're still contagious, because it's that coughing and sneezing that propels the virus through respiratory droplets and can have it land on someone else and cause them to get sick.
And generally, for work purposes, the rule of thumb, again, but it isn't always perfect for every virus, is if you've got a fever, you particularly are more contagious, so should stay home. And then as things get better and you're feeling better and don't have a fever, with most viruses, it's okay to go back to work. But like Dr. Shah said, you want to take some precautions. If you're still sneezing and coughing, then you still could be contagious, although probably not as much so as when you were feeling much more ill and had a fever.
Chris, thanks for your question. We have an email from Elizabeth wondering why all the touch screens we use in public places every day are not mentioned as sources of flu transmission. I've never seen anyone cleaning public screens or touch pads.
Again, I would say the same for elevator buttons, although there aren't a lot of elevators probably in Maine, because I work in a building that has one. I'm always
thinking about it.
I use my knuckle, actually, which I get teased about. So, because some people at Maine Health have said, we don't know anybody else who touches the elevator button with their knuckle. But yes, you're absolutely right. It's a good point that there are a lot of surfaces we don't clean that people have their fingers on all the time. And again, another reason why not to touch your face if you have hands that have touched something else.
Are things that are outdoors, whether it's a grocery store cart that's outdoors waiting to be brought back in, or playground equipment, those are less likely to have a virus than something that stays indoors, correct?
Especially this time of year with the sub-zero temperatures we had yesterday morning. And I noticed in some grocery stores now they actually have wipes as you enter the building, and you can take them and wipe off your cart.
But those are probably less likely to have the germs than perhaps pushing your PIN number for a debit card into a touchscreen. Interesting. Yeah. An email question from Ed. Why is the flu virus seasonal?
Boy, that is one of the $64,000 questions
in infectious disease. $64 million question.
Yes.
Million.
Ed, we need to. If you're ever looking for extra employment at the Maine CDC, we might have a role for you. There are a lot of different reasons. One of which is that the viruses that cause the flu, it's not just one. It's a family of viruses. They tend to change and they tend to mutate. And as a result of that, what we do in the United States is that in early spring, the scientific community, looks at what's going on in the Southern Hemisphere when they're having their winter to try to make predictions about what might be happening here. The other is that any kind of virus, but particularly influenza viruses, depend on colder weather for transmission. And so that's one of the reasons that the flu has a season, is that it tends to be correlated with cold and the transmission that can occur in those types of climates. There are a lot of different reasons. Ed, it's an excellent question, and it's one that there's a lot of scientific research on.
All right. A good topic for a PhD dissertation, sounds like.
Nobel Prize, I would say.
Nobel Prize. Okay. Yeah. An email from Cynthia. What are the symptoms of the coronavirus that would distinguish it from the flu? I got the flu shot, but understand it's not very effective this year. It would be useful to know what to look for. So if one gets corona, one could no to check in with healthcare so it gets reported?
Well, it's a good question. I'd like to just emphasize at the top that there are no confirmed cases in Maine. And according to the U.S. CDC, the risk of coronavirus remains low at this time. That being said, one of the challenges that's posed by this coronavirus on the healthcare community is that the symptoms of coronavirus infection are very similar to that of influenza. That is to say, fever, cough, sneezing, having really bad body aches, and just feeling really run down. The same symptoms can cause or can be mistaken for coronavirus or influenza. All the more reason that institutions like Dr. Mills had mentioned are starting to ask about travel history, so that if someone comes in the door with those symptoms, we can determine what their risk level is. But again, right now in the United States, the risk of coronavirus remains low. There are only 12 cases nationwide.
And I should just mention, too, that, you know, any time there's an epidemic, there are two epidemics. There's one of the particular disease, and there's also one of fear. And I just, something that Dr. Shaw just mentioned reminded me of that. And also our discussion earlier about influenza and how we don't have that fear about influenza because it happens all the time every year. But there's a lot of fear about coronavirus right now. And I think the most important thing is to stay informed. But keep checking out. The Maine CDC and US CDC have great websites on coronavirus. So I'd recommend staying informed and using excellent respiratory hygiene. But there isn't any reason to be fearful either. And yet I know that this comes along with the territory. Whenever there's something new, a new epidemic, a new outbreak, that's something we always see is a lot of fear around it.
I'm going to go to Bernie in Vassalboro. Bernie, we're almost out of time. So if you could ask your question quickly, that'd be great.
Yeah, hi. First, thanks for this. SARS never did come out with a vaccine. Do you see a vaccine necessary for something like this?
Bernie, it's a great question. And because of how rapidly the genome, the DNA in this virus was sequenced, believe it or not, there are already candidate vaccines that the National Institute for Health has already started developing. But that being said, a vaccine for this coronavirus could be many months, could be many years away. It's impossible to predict. My own view is that we can never have too many vaccines. The vaccines are useful, and to the extent that this virus continues to circulate and individuals remain at high risk, there's always a role for additional vaccines to protect us against infectious diseases.
And Bernie's question is going to be our last question of the hour. If you have a question, though, and we're not able to get through today, can someone contact the Maine CDC with that question?
By all means.
All right, great. Well, thank you so much, both of you, for being here on the program. That was Dr. Nirav Shah. He's director of the Maine Center for Disease Control, the Maine CDC, and Dr. Dora Mills, Chief Health Improvement Officer for Maine Health. Used to have Dr. Shaw's job. Nikki Shields ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling at mainecalling.org, as well as links and resources. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Today's show will be broadcast again tonight at 8. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.